Redbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
Are you looking to serve God and society? Consider putting your gifts to work as a lawyer. Ave Maria School of Law has been educating faith-filled lawyers for over 20 years. Ave Maria School of Law is committed to training lawyers to use law appropriately around the moral issues of our time. Visit avemarialaw.edu to learn more about integrating your faith with a law degree.
This is Tim Staples of Catholic Answers. I'm excited to let you know that I also teach high school apologetics for homeschoolconnections.com, an online Catholic curriculum provider. There are also recorded independent learning courses at homeschoolconnections.com. Whether you take apologetics with me, literature with Joseph Pierce, or philosophy with Bill Donahue, or any of the other 400 plus courses with homeschoolconnections.com, it's a great way to get Catholic learning for your family.
Welcome to Live a Little. I am excited for today's guest, Oğuz Alhan. We met over the internet, even though we grew up in the same country. And he has a wonderful story that I'm looking forward for you to hear it. Okay, welcome, Oğuz. Thanks for joining us today.
Hey, Daria. Thanks for having me.
Okay, it's wonderful. Let's start with a prayer. Do you want opening up with a prayer? Is that okay?
Sure. Okay. Father, we thank you for all the blessings you have given us. And thank you for blessing us abundantly with many riches and many glories and graces. Thank you for calling us to yourself and drawing us closer to yourself and saving us in your mercy and in your grace. We pray that this conversation will be fruitful and helpful for many people to understand the context of Turkey, Turkish people, and those who are lost and living in darkness, so that our conversation can be a light to many people. You direct our talk, our conversation with your Holy Spirit, and we thank you for this opportunity as well. I pray in Jesus Christ's name. Amen.
Amen. Thank you. Okay, just tell us where you grew up as much as you know you want and how you were raised and a little bit of your family life back in Turkey.
Yeah, I born and grew up in Istanbul and I spent most of my life there. I born and grew up in this nominal Turkish family. It is sometimes hard to explain because just by calling Turkish family nominal doesn't explain everything because it's really strange context. Although my family is not religious, they don't live their life based on Islamic rules every single part of their life. But they have some sort of connection to it because of their national identity. Since the fall of Ottoman Empire, they have this national identity that if you are a Turkish person, you have to be Muslim. Or it's not even like you have to be Muslim. There's no any other way of thinking. The Americans or Western Europeans are Christians. Eastern Europeans are Orthodox and Russians as well. And if you're a Turk, you're a Muslim. So that's what they think, that's the context that I grew up. But they are not religious people and they are not going to mosque. They are not praying five times a day or anything. The closest thing you can think of a religious life is the month of Ramadan, which everyone becomes religious. They just fast for 30 days and that's pretty much it. So I grew up in that kind of family and I never interested in religion for a long time. But at some point I felt something is lacking in my life. I was looking for some spirituality, some sort. And the first thing that I could go to, the religion that I thought I was part of, Islam.
Well, so, how old were you when this desire manifested itself?
I think I was around 12, 13. Around 13, I would say. Yeah, I wanted some substance in my life, some spirituality, some religious context, to be honest. And that led me to do prayers. Like, I started praying 5 times a day, or I started reading Quran. And just like you mentioned in your book, that I've been sent to, since I was a little kid, like I would say since I was 7 years old or something, I've been sent to this mosque in our neighborhood for summertime when schools are closed. Pretty much everyone in the neighborhood, all the kids go to mosque and they learn how to read Quran, even if they don't understand it. They even learn how to chant it, like read in a beautiful way, even if you don't understand it. They also had some sort of religious education classes too. It was not just simply reading Quran in Arabic. So, and I was interested more and more. I was involved in more. At first, I did not like it. And I would say most of us do not like it. I remember my friends, it was some sort of a social pressure that you have to go, because everyone does. That's a thing you have to do. But anyway, eventually I grew up liking it. I liked reading another language, even though I did not understand it. It was a magical thing for me. And that's what I thought it was. You're able to read it, you're able to chant it, and that's some spiritual, mystical thing. And you pray 5 times a day, you get closer and closer to this divine, but not really. We can talk more probably later, but you never get this personal relationship or anything like that. It's just that you are serving to divine being and you find some sort of fulfillment in it. Eventually, I was not happy with that. I feel like it was more of a, I was proud of myself. I was like, I'm doing this. I'm different. I'm more religious. I am distinct. None of my friends do. None of them friends worship God or pray. But I was, and I saw a lot of appreciation from my family and friends. They were liking it, or that they were thinking good of me, and that kind of puffed me up more and more. But there was something not satisfying, but I could not tell what it is. And eventually, I started learning more about my religion and about other religions as well. That happened in mosque, because that, as I said, they had this religious education classes as well. You can think of like catechism. We call it Ilmihal. You study Ilmihal, and part of it, you have to study the previous prophets and religions that came and corrupted. They were saying, yeah, there was this prophet Moses, he's given the Torah, Tevrat, and that's corrupted. And you see David, and David is given, they would say Zebur, but it's clearly the author of Quran, or even Muslims do not know what Zebur is. It is Psalms. I think
it's the Psalms, right? Okay.
Yes. Yeah, it is Psalms, but they do not know it's just the poetic writings, and that's part of the Old Testament canon in a sense, but they think it's just a separate book and for guidance to the people, just like Torah, like books of Moses. And they say, and then Jesus came, Prophet Jesus, and he's been given New Testament. So all these books are like the previous ones. They are just like a guidance for people how to live and to whom to worship. But apparently, again, the author of Quran or Muslims do not know the context of these. And all these are corrupted. Each time it is corrupted by Israelites, God sent another one and another one and another one, and finally got tired of it and said, you know what, I'm going to send this last time, and I promise I will not let it get corrupted. I will protect it. I don't know why that special treatment this time, but he decided that. And and that's Islam, and that's what we believe. And the question was in my mind, I still remember, like, are there still people, Christians? If so, why? And what they read, what it's like their books, like what's in them, because it was so alien to us. It's like these people are Martians and these books are so mysterious and far away. No one has access to, nobody knows where they are. But yeah, it piqued my interest and I wanted to learn more and more about it, but I did not have any resources. There was not internet available then. And as you know, Turkey is not a big country on libraries or something, unless you go to a college. And I was 13, 14 years old by the time. So that was it. I was just curious, but that's it. I couldn't do anything. And all this in God's providence, I would say. But then there was this class, I'm sure you know, in schools, it's mandatory. You have to take it. It's a religious class. They call it something like the culture, religion, and information about ethics. Not ethics like we think it is in West, but it is more about teaching of Islam.
Like more morality, right? More than, yeah, I would say.
Yeah, yeah. It's just a teaching of Islam or religion in schools. And you have to take these classes unless your parents give consent or some paperwork to the school that you are exempt from this class. And you had to do projects. I don't know how it was for you, but in our years, there were groups, group studies, and each group was presenting certain chapters of this book, like certain units. And one of the unit was different religions, and different groups of friends were studying, and they were presenting these different world religions from like Judaism to Christianity to Hinduism, Buddhism, and different kinds. And a group of my friends, they were presenting on Christianity. And this girl brought a New Testament to the school, to the classroom, to show that what Christians are actually believing. And I was like, what? Really? Like they actually have the physical copy of a book in Turkish. And it's a small book. I think it was the Gideon Bible. Like Gideon, you know, they have this small right. New Testament with some.
Like we had it, like I remember there was an Injil, you know, I remember finding one, I think when I was like 15, 16, like a red small copy. But I mean, I had no idea what kind it was, but that's the one I saw the most often back then.
It's definitely like those, but this one was a bit older and it was a soft letter bound. So most of the time what we're talking about is like for evangelistic purposes, it's paperback, it's small, it's just a New Testament in jail. But this one was a letter bound and old. I could even see it from papers. I think it was published around the 70s, 80s, somehow. And I asked my friend if I could borrow it. And but I was so scared because that's the thing that's also you mentioned in your book that there's such a fear that infused in you from Islam or this culture that you're so scared of these things or even questioning things or being curious about it is such a scary thing, fearful thing.
Yeah, I think it's very hard for the Westerners to understand that. Like when that fear is ingrained in you from such an early age, that it's just so hard. Even like, I can't imagine even the desire to read Injil is, the New Testament is like, would fill you with fear because you're not supposed to even question, be curious, like anything like that. So if your like mind is going that way, you already are in like mortal sin, you know, kind of like you've gone already too far.
Yeah, exactly. So I really wanted to have it. I really wanted to read it, but I was like so scared from God. Like, I don't know if I'm supposed to do this, but also I'm afraid of like, what would people say? would they think why I'm curious about it? That was the thing in my mind. If I go and ask my friend if I can borrow the book, would she ask like why I'm wanting to read it, why I'm interested in it, or my friends or my teacher? That's the fear in my mind. And forget my family. Like, I'm like, if I get this book, there's no way I'm telling my mom and dad that I have this book and I'm reading it. I carried it in my backpack and brought it home. No way. So, but I did ask my friend, and she was like, yeah, sure, get it. And I did borrow from her, and she never asked this back for later. Like, I had the book for, I would say, 3-4 months, like almost for a semester. And I started reading it. Soon later, my mom found it in my backpack. I don't know how it was your mom, but my mom was always going through my backpacks to if I ate my lunch. Or she's packing my lunch and put it in my backpack and whatnot. But someday, I was being careful, but somehow she found it. And in really quiet voice, she was asking, like, why you have this? Like, what are you doing with this? Whose book is it? And where did you find it? And give it back. Or I will tell your dad. And I was frightened. Like, even if she did nothing, she did not tell my dad or something, I was frightened, embarrassed. I was not able to look my mom's face and her eyes. I feel like I've been caught up. But I didn't return it. I tried to hide it better next time. And I started reading it. I started reading from the beginning, Matthew. And I was enjoying so much. And by the time I already read the Quran in original, in Arabic, even though I was not understanding, but I was also reading translation. Somehow our mosque, usually you will not see that in Turkey. It will not be encouraged. But mosque that I was going to, they were recommending reading a translation, a reliable translation, they would say. I even remember the name Elmalı Hamdi Yazır, that guy's translation, reliable one. And so I knew Quran, I read it, but that's all the religious book that I knew. So there is nothing to be questioned about. And I did not have any other worldview to question ethical things in it. So I was like, sure. Yeah, fine. This is the book that I believe in and I'm part of. But I started reading New Testament and I enjoyed it more. I liked it. It's a storybook, first of all, compared to Quran. It's a collection of Gospels, especially. It's just even Acts. It's just a story. You read a recording of Jesus' life. You don't get that in Quran. And in fact, you would be really confused if you read Quran without any guidance. So that was one nice thing about New Testament. And when I came to the passages like Sermon on the Mountain, I was enjoying it. It was like, wow, it is beautiful. It is artistically written well. It's literature-wise. I was reading a lot of books by the time, and it was like, it's like one of those. It's beautifully written and beautiful teachings too. Compared to what I was reading in Quran. Like, in Quran, you see a lot of violence and teaching about who should you be friends with or not, or when someone should be killed or whatnot, which was very normal to me at the time, as that's the first thing I learned. And Jesus is talking about, like, love your enemies, and if you just be nice to your friends, like, what's it good to you? What difference do you have from the other sinners? And that was fascinating to me. And slowly I was questioning more, and I'm sure you would recall this, but in Islam, or even in the Turkish context, you do not have such thing like what today many people will question, like there is one absolute truth. The religions are given, yes, they are corrupted, but God is God. God is up there, one God, and is not changing. So there are not different gods of, like, gods of Judaism, God of Christianity, God of Islam. God is up there, and there are people belong to the books. So people are not particularly, in people's mind, divided into groups of people who are worshiping a particular god, but they're p- people following a book per se. So idea is like everyone worshiping one God anyway. Christians, yeah, they don't know correctly, especially the people do not know about Trinity or Jesus and whatnot. Everyone is thinking, and I was too, oh yeah, we all believe in same God. God is there. It's a matter of which book you're following, and Quran is the true and uncorrupted book, so you have to follow Quran. But reading New Testament, I was questioning, this book is better. I like it better. I enjoy it better. And slowly,
can I follow this one instead?
Sorry?
Can I follow this one instead, please?
Yes. Yes, that's the thing. Like, can I? But also, you're so scared to even think such a thing. Like, mm-hmm. I'm always afraid that, oh my goodness, I'm going to go to hell. I'm enjoying this book. I like this book. I follow this book. I feel like I belong to this book. So I'm going to go to hell. That's all the fear in my mind. And even there was a point that I called myself, okay, I'm Christian because I follow this book. I like this book. But even then I was like, at some point in my life, I'll go back to the true religion, Islam. That, I don't know if that will help the Westerners, but that's the mindset. That's the fear you have. Even though you see truth, it's reasonable, rational. You concluded that this book is better and true. You're so afraid that you're thinking, oh, at some point in my life, I'll come back to the true religion and true book, even if I think that's not nice. So there was a period of time in my life that that's how I was thinking. And so, yeah, I was calling myself Christian. I was interested in more and I wanted to learn more. And by the time I was around 14, we had a computer at home, internet, access to many different things. I started researching for churches, and only church I knew in my mind is Catholic churches. Like when you say church, that's all comes to mind. And that's part of a Hollywood effect. Like that's from the movies or the books we read. A church is that. And even at the time, Protestant groups, even today, unfortunately, they are promoting this house church idea, which I don't appreciate. That sounded like cultish to me. Eastern people, I mean, people from Turkey or Eastern Europe would know this, especially from Muslim context. If a religious group is meeting at house, they are cultish. They are what we call tariqat. Like, yeah, even in Islam, even my like majority of the Turkish people will not be comfortable with the Muslim people gathering at a house.
If someone is to worship, like you have, like you read the Quran and stuff, but the tariqats, like those cults, are, it's more like a worship and kind of exclusive. Yeah, no, I see. I never made the connection, but I see, I can see your point. Yeah.
Yeah. Like even my parents, they would be so suspicious of those groups, even if they're just gathering to read Quran or talk about religious stuff, which they call chats or a conversation. They call it the sohbet. And like those groups are weird. Like they are, yeah, they are some sort of cultish, exclusive. And these home churches that I saw on addresses of them online, when I looked up for church addresses, which Protestants were majority. And I was like, no, I'm not doing any of these things. And at first Protestants sounded to me, like how Alevi groups are in Turkey. I grew up in a Sunni family, a different sect of Islam, a more conservative, I would say mainline Islam group, denomination. And there was also Alevis, and we always thought to think that they are actually not following the truth. They are not following the true tenets of Islam. They just made up stuff for themselves. They just corrupted it. They are not praying like how we pray. They don't go to mosque. So it's just like, yeah, it's a sect and a corrupted sect of Islam. They did not even think that they are Muslims.
Okay.
They
were Alevis. Like this is a Turkish Shiite sect. So like I don't think many people are very familiar. Alawites, like that's how they're translated, I suppose, in English. Or sometimes they call themselves Nusayris. I don't know. That's not very common, but in Turkey, they're known as Alevis. So they have a special, I would say, reverence to Ali, who was he son of Muhammad?
Just son.
Like an adopted son, I think. Like an adopted son. Son-in-law, yes.
It was son-in-law.
Yes, I remember. Never mind. Anyway, so they have a special reverence to him. But they are also a lot more progressive, I'd say, in their like political views, because maybe they've been persecuted for a long time, and they are very also exclusive. They have their own, like, they don't worship in the mosque. They have their own worship areas, and so those are Alawites. It's like a small Shiite group in Turkey.
Yeah. And I was making the correlation, just like I was making with the cultish groups. I was saying, oh, these Protestants, as the name advertises, they are protesting the mainline Christianity, which is Catholicism. And that showed a lot of peculiarity, because when you look at the Roman Catholic Church, they have beautiful church buildings, clearly temples, clearly worship places. And Protestants, even in our religious books that we learned, they don't gather in religious places. They don't gather in certain temples. They don't have idea of temple. And they are just gathering at homes because of this. So short story, I was making connection that, though, these Protestants are bad. They are gathering in homes, and they sound very much cultish, and they are not mainline, and they are probably not following the true Christianity anyway. And I found this church, the most famous one in Istanbul, St. Antoine Church. And I think you mentioned a couple times in your podcast as well. It's a beautiful church.
Yeah, this is where I went to my first mass, and that's the only one that's open to public in Turkey, because all the other churches, you need to be part of the congregation, or it's just, yeah, it's different. But this is it's located in one of the busiest streets of Istanbul, and it's a church named after Saint Anthony of Padua. And it's run by Franciscans now, and they evangelize. It's a wonderful place. I mean, we are just so blessed. And it was, I think, was built in 16th century, so it's old, not as old as some things in Turkey. But yeah, I mean, it's a beautiful place. If you ever visit Istanbul, definitely go and visit St. Anthony's. They do good work there. Anyway, sorry, I keep interrupting. Go ahead.
No, I appreciate it. And this church is like, as you said there, yeah, it's one of the busiest streets in Istanbul. It's downtown. It's a Hollywood Boulevard, and all the shops and stores, restaurants. And in the middle of this, there's this giant, beautiful, historical, Gothic-style building. It's beautiful. But it's like an hour and a half away from my house. And those who know Turkey would know that it's not a car culture. It's a public transportation culture. So you have to take an hour and a half, like minibus to bus to train and then subway, so you can get to downtown. My family was living far from downtown. And I'm like, I'm 14. I never done that kind of a trip to downtown by myself. But I don't know where I get that courage, but I said, I'm going to do it. I'm not going to go to school this Tuesday. I even looked up, they had a Turkish mass early in the morning at 11 a.m. Because most of the masses in there, they were in Polish, Italian, I think they had a Portuguese, if I'm not mistaken, and Turkish masses on Sundays, especially, were at night at 7 p.m. and it gets dark. And for a 14-year-old traveling in Istanbul, which is 15 million people, it's such a scary thing. I always think my family is following me, or they are just watching me or something. So I'm like, I'm not going to be able to do that at Sunday night. And only time I can go to mass is Tuesday, 11 a.m. It's Turkish anyway. And they even advertise it, it conducted with organ music. I was like, oh, that's great. Yeah. And I think Tuesday, because they are, that Tuesday is dedicated for St. Anthony of Padua.
Hey, what year is it now? Do you remember?
Sorry?
What year?
I would not be able to tell the year, but we can do a quick calculations, I guess. I was 14 and I born in 1995. Okay. I don't know what that
means. So we're good. 2009, is that what it is? Did we do it right?
That's right. Yeah, because
that's around the time. Oh, that's excellent. That's great. Okay.
Yeah, and I went there, but I'm so scared. And it's downtown. It's a beautiful place. Everybody goes there. It's really crowded. But I'm trembling in fear. What if my family follows me? What if they know? What if they watch me? What if my dad is, like, because my dad goes to downtown for work, although it's a giant city.
But I'm thinking, Istanbul. What are the odds? But yeah, but you're full of fear. Like,
exactly.
All this stuff comes to mind.
Yeah, it's 15 million people. And even in the city center, everyone floods to the downtown, to city center for work. And for somehow, I have fear of encountering with my dad in the middle of the street, which my dad never goes to Istiklal Street, which is the church is on that street. But I'm so scared that I'm just emphasizing to tell, especially Western listeners, to show that how fearful thing is for someone like Turkish person to have conversion experience. Mm-hmm. And anyway, I went there. I'm trembling in fear. I'm so scared. I'm trying not to be seen. Like, who's going to see me? But I'm still in fear. I went into the church and I sat down. It was peaceful. It was beautiful. If you've been there, you know it's beautiful and peaceful place, even though it's really crowded. Bunch of people visit. It's like a touristic area as well. And you would see a lot of Muslim people. Like every single day, Muslim people who never been in a church just go there to see a church, a witness. And you would see groups of people, even young women, even if they are like covered in hijab or something, they come and they lit a candle to pray. And that kind of shows the superstitions or spirituality of Turkey. People just go to different places and different shrines of Muslim saints, I would say. That's how I would describe. And they tie ribbons or they put some papers and pray and wish things. And a lot of people come to St. Anthony Church, St. Antoine Church, to pray and wish things through candlelight.
Yeah, I don't know if you listened to it, but I interviewed Father Father Anthony before, and he was there, and a lot of people come and ask them to, like, almost like cast spells.
Yes.
You know, the what is it called? Papa's Biusu. Have you?
Yes.
I mean, it's awful stuff, but like it's Islam is very definitely superstitious, but I would say there's a lot of not very good spiritual connections there too. I don't know if you went to mass, so you know that like nobody receives in the hand in Turkey.
Yeah.
Because there is this spell, like it's called the priest spell or whatever, and it requires a consecrated host. So like you go to Turkey, the priest is going to watch you like a hawk until you consume that host. Like, you know, so it's just, there's just a different spiritual element there. That's why you would see a lot of Muslims, like people who struggle from infertility, they would come and ask a priest to like, say this, like they don't even ask necessarily for a prayer. It's more like a spell. Wouldn't you think it was like, it's very kind of magic-y, superstitious kind of desire. Not that they have any spiritual power, but it's almost like every time you pray for somebody, this will happen. Like it's like a more like a spell. So that's why you would see like women in hijabs going there, not necessarily to learn about Christianity, but because like they're there to, you know, ask for that stuff. I'm just trying to provide a little context because otherwise it gets a little confusing. Like what are these women doing in the Catholic Church? So, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Like for Muslims, the religion is a tool. It's not of a worship or a relationship with the divine, but it's just a tool. It's a tool for guide, like how to live life. But also when you encounter these magics or spells that cast on you, which is very popular in Turkey, that you just go and find solutions in places. And most of the people, this is the story that we hear again and again, people go to their imams and they say, oh, this is Papaz Biyusu, the literal translation, the spell of a priest. Not that it's cast by a priest, but it's like only they can solve it.
They can undo it, yeah.
Yes, yeah. And that's why you would see, as you said, there are a lot of these Muslim women, they don't care about Christianity. They don't care about the mass. They don't care about any religious thing. And they would not even care about their own religious stuff. They would not go to mosque particularly. But once they are encountered, once somebody told them, hey, there's a spell cast on you, or if they find this spell written on a paper and put it into a jar, and they found it in their house because somebody did actually try to cast a spell on their house. When they encounter these kind of things, they just come and try to find a solution. And many times, especially on Tuesdays and I think Thursdays, there's a confession in St. Antoine Church. And in the line, you would see mostly Muslim and or even like non-religious nominal Muslims in the line of confessional than a Christian. Like, seriously. The majority of them would be Muslims.
I don't think I've ever been then at the time of confession. So that's hilarious.
Yeah, I've been there. I even went to talk to one of the priests in a similar way to talk to them about certain things, and I was waiting in line for confessional, and very early on, I was about like 14 years old again. People in the line, they're just communicating, they're just talking. Somebody has I even encountered those conversations. This elderly woman came there with his daughter. Apparently somebody cast a spell on them, so their marriage is terrible. And they are there to find a solution. So they are there to talk to priests. And yeah, most of them would have stories like that. And they're waiting in line to talk to priests. And again, there are very few Christians waiting in line. Not that they don't go to confession, but it's just a funny thing that majority of the people are Muslims or nominal Muslims.
Yeah. Bless the Franciscans for running it. Okay, so your first mass, tell us.
Yeah, I went there. Of course, I was sitting at the back, not understanding much. I thought it's beautiful. I thought it was nice. And I was, every time I encounter something Christianity or Catholic, I always compare where I came from. And first thing was, people are participating in it, they are watching it. Compared to Islam in a mosque, you would not do anything. You just do certain movements. You just bow and kneel and things like that. And you pray these prayers, these Arabic prayers that you don't understand. So cognitively in mosque, you are not participated at all. Physically, you're there. Physically, you're doing movements and rituals. But your intellect, your cognitive, nothing there. Nothing. Except for preaching, perhaps. And that'll be literally 3 minutes maximum. It's called hutbah. The imam would climb up these stairs and then will present this message sent by Ministry of Religious Affairs. It's not even like that person's imam's sermon or homily or anything like that. They just printed out these homilies for 2-3 minutes, literally maximum 3 minutes, and sent by religious affairs. And that's, nobody cares about them. Nobody listens to them. It's boring. It's usually given some sort of social message in it and something like that. But in church, even they are having different languages for those who are speaking those languages. And if this wasn't Turkish, people are participating. There's dialogue going on in liturgy, which I appreciate now even more. And people are participating in it. They are hearing it. They are watching it. They are thinking about it. They are participating in prayers cognitively, understanding in mental prayers, confessions. I was fascinated compared to Islam. And Mass was over. Again, I'm trying not to talk to anyone. I'm trying not to be seen by anyone. I did not introduce myself to anyone. I just saw there's this little bookstore type of place, and they had this Catholic publication, not even like a, usually today you would find a Protestant Bible Society publications of New Testaments or Bibles, but by then it was published by St. Antoine Church, a New Testament. It was a blue cover, I even remember today, and there was a cross of St. Antoine Church, particularly dedicated to that church. It was a logo, and it was $2 or $3. Lira, and it was so cheap. I was like, okay, I'm getting it. And there was another book there. I don't know who was the author, but it was really popular. It's something like Muslims are asking, Christians are answering, something like that. And there were a bunch of questions about Christianity, particularly Catholicism. And I got those two books, and I also got a rosary. I don't know why I did it then, because I did not even know Christians were praying rosary, but I liked it. And I got the rosary, and I also bought a candle, and I lit the candle, and I came home immediately. I did not stop anywhere else. I was not like, oh, I'm in downtown. Let me enjoy a little bit. No, I was like, immediately, I need to go back to my neighborhood.
Before I get caught.
Exactly.
Yeah. Hey, yeah, I didn't stop by the Turkish Delight store across the church. It's my favorite. Yes. I just thought about it randomly. Yeah. But yeah.
No, I did not see. I even remember there's this, once you get off the bus stop, and there's this really thin street that just takes you to right across the church. On Istiklal Street. I used that street only. I just went to the church and get out of it. And through that street, I just went back to the bus stop and get into the bus and went back to my neighborhood. And I started reading New Testament. I tried to learn pray the rosary. Like, goodness gracious, I could not find anywhere an information. I was asking people, there is this something called Christian Forum, christianforum.com. There are Protestants, Catholics, Orthodox, they were making comments and sending articles and things like that. I'm asking people, like, for please, like, let me know how it is. It's very complicated. If you know Muslim rosary, it's just simple. You're just reciting God's name over and over and over again for 33 times. There's nothing else you're doing. There's no prayer involved. And this is nothing like that. And there are different beads, and there's one and then three and then one and then 10 decades, yeah, and then there's one in between those beads. What am I supposed to do with this? How am I supposed to pray? And there are some informations, but I'm not getting it. Anyway, sorry, that took a long time. And yeah, I'm trying to learn. I'm reading it. And my mom found it, the New Testament again. And she also found my rosary, and she took them away from me and said, if I see these things again, like, you're not going to be comfortable here. I'm going to tell your dad. And that's like something that I most feared of. I probably feared my dad more than God. And I was like, okay, I'm sorry. I'm apologizing. I'm not arguing at all. I'm not asking my book or rosary back at all. And my mom goes to her neighbors sometime, and I'm just trying to find in her drawers where she put my rosary. I don't think she threw it away. Where is it? Like, where's my New Testament? And this repeated 2 or 3 times. I went next Tuesday, I'm not necessarily next, but like a couple Tuesdays after, I went again, got another New Testament. I came back a couple weeks later. My mom found it away again and took it away.
Find a better hiding spot. What is going on here?
I know. I don't know how she does it, but she did find each and every one of them.
It's the mother. I know it.
Yeah. Can I give a minute break to get a water?
Yes, of course. Please go take your time. It's different because you and I have different journeys, because I was an atheist by the time, like when you're just this good boy who's afraid what his mother is going to say. But this time I'm like, I'm an atheist. While you're sneaking off to go to the Catholic Church, I was sneaking off to Ankara because we lived in Konya, which is about, I'd say, 4.5 hours away from Ankara, to join into these communist protests. Like, that's where I am, and here you are, like hiding stuff from your mom to so that, you know, so that you don't get in trouble with them. This is like an interesting story, the way the Lord kind of reached to you through this through the books you found. But I also understand, like, the desire to hide it from your parents. And, like, you know, even though I had a bad relationship with my mother, I still didn't want to get in trouble, but I also didn't want her to get upset necessarily. There wasn't a father in the picture for me, but if he was at home, I would be a lot more afraid of him than, you know, her, definitely. That always goes. But I just remember I had to come up with this really elaborate lie to make it to this one communist protest. I think I was like 15, 16, maybe. Like, it was really elaborate, like, because we had to leave early in the morning, like 6. So I told her that we would get up early, go practice basketball, then go to the library and study, and then go to school and do this. Like, there was just this string of lies that I come up with that really kind of somewhat had to account for me being gone over like 18 hours. I mean, I don't know. I think just my mom didn't want to kind of dig too deep. She really didn't quite care where I was at the end of the day, because I don't know how anybody would fall for that string of lies. But are you back, Oz?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. Did you have a good relationship with your parents other than your, Bible mishaps?
Not really. And I cannot pinpoint why. I'm sure there are a lot of psychological and sociological stories behind it, but not really, no. I never had a relationship with my father, good relationship at all. And I would not even say I had a relationship with him. I mean, he was there at the house and he was providing for us, but no, I did not have a good relationship with them, neither of them, unfortunately.
I think it's very common.
Yes.
Because this is one of my theories. I'm sure I'm not the first one who came up with it. I just haven't read far enough. But the way, the relationship between God in whatever culture, God and the believer, is kind of shapes everything else in the society. So if, you know, God is the master and you're the slave, like in Islam, that kind of shapes every level of society, like men and, you know, women and father and son. It's always like, it's just never, in Christianity, because we have a filial relationship with God, that also kind of trickles down to marriage and the family relationship. Not that like we have to be best buddies with our kids, anything like that, but also there's like a more intimate connection between the individuals and members of the society, because that conversion, that relationship with the Lord happens in the heart and in the soul. And like you say, in Islam, it's a lot more external. and the way things look is much more important than how things are, what is happening in the soul and in the heart or in the mind of a person. So I think like your relationship, your experience with your parents is very common. Like I had a broken family, so like that kind of accounts for why my relationship with my parents were messed up. But the way yours is, it's like distance, a bit cold, but there isn't really a reason for it. It's like, I think that's how the majority of Muslim families are, I would say. What do you think?
That's so true. And I, again, we are just doing some observations as lay people, but in Islam, you don't question God. Like, even idea of like questioning God is like, how dare you? Like, you do not question anything. You just simply obey. And rules are so detailed. Like, you don't even have to question how to do things. So there's no place even for curiosity of any Islamic rule or life per se. And even though majority of the people in Turkey do not read Quran or do not read Islamic books, this culture, which is like, we are talking about 600 years old culture, marinated with this Islamic thought and culture, even though it's unique to Turkey compared to other Middle Eastern countries, it is so marinated with this. So I remember my dad is like, when I question certain things, which is so illogical, I won't even give examples of it because this is so absurd and stupid. But when my dad asked me to do certain things, and when I asked why, and he's like, you do not ask questions. And he was getting really mad and yelling and shouting and getting really aggressive and threatening that I was even thinking. He never beat me up, but that's also a common story that you hear, that fathers beat up their sons quite often and not in a disciplinary way that you would see in a Christian house, like spanking or something. The fathers will beat up their kids in Turkey, which I witnessed, my uncles and my other friends, they experienced these things just for the sake of beat up. I mean, that's some sort of discipline, but they will be hurting. Like, you would see marks of like beating up on their faces and bodies. So, and I was always like, I did not have that, but that can happen. It's not like impossibility. So, and it's the same thing, you know, like you don't question God, you just obey, and you're feared of him, afraid of him constantly. Loving God, like, no way. Like, who are you to love God? Like, you're just a slave and human being. There's no such love relationship. And even these Sufi Islam, like Mevlana Celaleddin Rumi or Rumi as it is known in West, when these Sufis are so influenced by Christianity and Christian thought and preaching loving God, and people were questioning and making fun of them. Like, they were like, oh, this is such a mysterious, stupid thing. Like, you are weird. You're not Muslim. And there's popularity today about those groups, but not as much as you want. So yeah, that's definitely true. And families are influenced by this Islamic culture and thought over the years. And yeah, you see these broken houses or relationships are not really a family relationships. It's just a different world out there.
It is. So what happened after your... So you kept going back on Tuesdays?
Not every Tuesday, but a lot. I was just going there, attending mass, not doing anything, not talking to anyone. Each and every time, the same fears. But I was going there, reading New Testament, reading certain books that I picked up from there. And I was praying. I was lighting candles. I was just sitting there most of the time, not doing anything, enjoying the building and the presence. And yeah, one day I was like, I'm learning more, of course. By the way, I have to do a footnote that I do not understand the gospel all this time. It's maybe a year or so. I do not know specifically why Jesus died or resurrected or anything like that. It's just a story to me. And I'm like, yeah, he was preaching this message, and Jews apparently did not like him and killed him, and that's part of the story. There's no significance of it. So that's a footnote just for understanding the context, but also still learn about Christianity in general. And I know I have to be baptized. That's what I see in New Testament. I keep reading. And one day I'm like, okay, I'm going to talk to a priest. And I talked to one of the security guards in the church. Yes, if for those listeners, yes, we have security guards in our churches in Turkey. And I talked to him and said, hey, I need to talk to a priest. I want to talk to someone. And he directed me to this building next to the church, if you remember. It's on the right side.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I went there, rang the bell, and somebody opened the door. And actually, there was another lady who was waiting before me. And I think she was Christian. And she just talked to him briefly out there. And they concluded some meeting time or something like that. And then he came to me, and I was expecting him, I don't know who that priest was, and he had a very broken Turkish, and I did not speak English then. And he was not welcoming me, and that was weird. I was hoping that I could sit down and explain things. And he was just, okay, what do you need? That's the question he asked. And I said, hey, I'm Christian. I would like to be baptized. I don't even know what I'm supposed to say. And I'm just coming to church. I'd like to be baptized. And then he asked me, obviously my age is clear, definitely younger than 18. And he asked, how old are you? And I said, yeah, I'm 14 or 15. I don't remember what I said then, but I know that I was around 14 and 15. And he panicked. And for those who listen, if you're under 18 and if your family does not have consent for you to go to a church or talk to another religion's member or religious institution, that religious institution, which is most likely church, would be in danger.
You have to apostolize in general, but especially like they will close your church. If like they baptized you at that age, that will be grounds for the Turkish government to kind of close that church, get like kind of, what's that word? Exile? No, like get rid of all the priests. What is the word? Like,
deported?
Deport. Thank you. I'm like, what's that word? Come to me. So deport all the priests. So like it's a big deal. That's why the priest is panicking. Like it's like you're 15. You like they wouldn't probably touch you with a 10-foot pole. Yeah.
Yeah, probably he was even like, goodness, like how this guy get into this chapel, like we're gonna be in trouble. Like he was just trying to get me out of there as soon as possible. But for me, it was very discouraging then. It did not discourage me from any Christianity or anything like that, but I was so discouraged. I did not even go to church there, but I was still reading my New Testament, still praying, and I was hoping something for, and it's for a year I was keep going to church. He even said this, the priest said, yeah, church's door is open, you can come whenever you want, but please don't talk to us. He literally said that. And yeah, I've been going to church here and there, especially sometimes I was going with my friends because we were just going to downtown to have a coffee or just go downtown, have fun. I was going with them as well, and because I'm not telling them I was Christian or anything, but I was just showing them the church. And this is the time, like last year of my high school, and I was supposed to do some internship. And as part of my internship, I had to go to this conference. It was a big political conference. If people know, it's something like Davos. The world leaders are coming, religious leaders are coming. They're talking many different things, and it's hosted in Istanbul. It was big. It was expensive. It was international. And I was there doing my job, and I just met with an American guy there, and I was like, oh, this is so nice. I can speak to him in English. I can improve my English. Maybe I can be friends with him. That's what I'm thinking. And I reached out to him online later through Twitter. and I wanted to meet with them, and I did. After a while, not even the first meeting, after a while, I told him that I'm actually a Christian. And he was like, oh, I'm happy for you. He was so excited. I was like, why are you so excited? This is weird. Because in my mind, religion is between me and God, or it's all about me. It's not about community. It's nothing. It has to do nothing with others. And again, I don't know the gospel fully yet. Actually, that's not true. Before then, there was this American guy, and he reached out to me through social medias at some point in this story. And because I was asking a bunch of questions on web pages, and he reached out to me and through email and wanted to have Skype calls. And I said, sure. And we started talking, and eventually he understood that I read New Testament and I do stories and stuff, but I did not know the gospel. He was non-denominational, I believe, and he shared the gospel with me, and it was like a missing puzzle piece. I was like, oh, okay, now it makes sense. After a while, I understood the gospel. It meant more for me. I loved it. I contemplated even more and more. And I met with this guy, and he invited me to his church. He was a Christian too. This friend that I found in a conference. And this was a Baptist church, but they were not meeting in a house. That was one of my first questions. Where do you meet? Like, do you have a church building? And they said, Bakırköy, if you know Bakırköy. I was like, where is the church there? All I know is Armenian Orthodox church is there. And apparently they rented this very old Ottoman, we call it Kursk. It's like, I don't know what it is. It's
a mansion.
Old,
yeah.
It's an old Ottoman mansion. It's not even Ottoman. It's built by French as part of their embassy. And beautiful building, beautiful historical building. You could even call it a church, but it was not. It was like a house or office type of thing, office of the time, 1800s we are talking about. And they were meeting there, and I liked it. I was like, okay, good. I mean, they have their own building, and they meet there. It's nice. I can go and visit. It's not someone's house. And I visited there a couple times, and I stayed there. Because compared to other churches, they're either house churches or they were not accepting me. But apparently now I know they were risking a lot by letting me in, letting me go to their meetings. But I guess you could say they are a bit more taking the risk, I guess. And yeah, I've been there for a long time. And when I turned 18, I was baptized by that church. And and I grew up more and more in my Christian faith. I learned more. I read different books. And I went to Istanbul Bilgi University, and it was one of the unique universities that's more liberal, I would say, but in a healthy way. They are more into freedom. Most of the state universities are not welcoming different thoughts, different projects or professors, but this was a very unique university. And I studied history there, and as part of my graduation thesis, I wrote my thesis on this American Presbyterian missionaries in Ottoman Empire, and it was during the time of Armenian genocide. So that thesis could be published in that school or could be accepted. So that was a big thing. And I graduated, I started working for this Christian publishing house, and I've been translating, I've been editing, proofreading. I worked for a year and a half for this organization. In the meantime, this is what happened. My family knew, like, I did not talk to them. That's one thing. I kept hiding it for a long time, but not really. My mom knew that I was Christian. because she knew that I was wearing a cross crucifix necklace. She knew that I've been carrying rosary, New Testament, and not only New Testament. I even collected my money, which was expensive by then. I bought the Holy Bible, the Kitab al-Muqaddas. It was really expensive for a student like me. I had to save a lot. And she saw that. She saw more than one Christian book. Apparently, I was reading and being more devoted. She kept hearing there, threatening me, mentioning, doing some irony. But she was okay. Like, there's no point of talking about it. But I know my dad also knew, because he was making a lot of comments about when it comes to Christianity. I remember, I'm not sure, it was Pope Benedict or Francis, when conclave is concluded and the Pope is chosen. I can't remember if it was Francis or...
if you're remembering it, it's Francis, Pope Francis.
Yes, you're probably right. I was watching it on BBC, my dad was making a lot of comments directed to me. Or might be, you're watching Christmas movies, and my brother is asking, like, Dad, why we don't have a Christmas tree? And my dad is like, why, are we Christian? Like, looking at me in a different way. Are we Christian? And I'm not saying anything. I'm not even looking at my dad. So those kind of things happened a lot. So I would say they knew it, but they were suppressing it. They were in denial mode. But, you know, it's the honor shame culture.
I was gonna say, it's such a shameful thing for them, you know.
They rather let it keep it to myself and not tell any of our relatives or friends. So this shameful thing does not come out. That's what I think. Mm-hmm. And maybe they were thinking, oh, it's a cultural thing. It's, oh, he loves Western culture, or like he wants to be more like Westerners or something like that, which is a typical accusation. Sorry?
It's a phase. It'll pass. It's like growing your hair out because everybody converts to Christianity in Turkey for the fun of it, you know?
Yes. Yes, exactly. This is a very typical accusation to young people in Turkey. Oh, it's a phase. You're just trying to be like American. You're embarrassed of your own culture, so you're trying to be like them and whatsoever. Right. And probably thought of that too, and they let it be. I was a member of these Christian churches, and I've been there. And this is another thing that will be interesting for Western listeners. My mom was into politics and in local politics, and she wanted to be a member of a city council from this conservative party. She's been involved in for years. And that's the thing, you know, everyone gets in there and gradually you're climbing up the hierarchy. You're becoming a member of this organization, and then you're a part of the board member, and then you're just elected. You're then hopefully will be put into elected office. And my mom was invested in this a lot. And she was offered for this position in the city council. It's not a big thing, but it's also in local elections wise, especially for these people who are interested in it. It is. And apparently government, who was also government was also from this party, conservative party, they did a background check on her. They found out that I've been meeting with Canadian American Christians, going to their churches, being involved. I was even like doing Bible studies with them and things like that. So somehow they knew it. I don't know how.
What do you mean somehow? We knew like there was always a plainclothes cop in every, like, at least in Ankara. Maybe it's like a little tighter in Ankara because it's the capital city, but like he would just sit there in the back reading his newspaper while the church services went on, and we would like bring him tea and cookies or whatever, you know. We didn't want him to, so like we knew there was always And you probably weren't a Christian back then, but do you remember those three Protestants murdered in the south, southeastern of Turkey? That's, I couldn't remember, 2005 maybe. Do you remember that?
Yes, I even know one of the German guys, Geske. I know his kids, I think his wife, Susanna, still in Turkey. There's Jati, a Turkish guy.
We went to their funeral in Izmir? I want to say it was somewhere in Izmir.
One of them was from Izmir, yes.
Yeah, and we could tell there was a bunch of guys from Turkish intelligence services. Basically, they were taking everybody's pictures and names. You know how people make fun of having a permanent record and a file here? That's actually a thing in Turkey that, there's no secret. The government is so overarching and reaching and that they knew. It doesn't surprise me. I tell people, because I was going, I attended the Middle East Technical University, and my undergrad was in international relations, which means I could have gotten, I could have become an ambassador or gotten a job in any of the ministries, right? Yeah, not so, because once you convert, you're basically tagged and you're never going to get a government job. Your mom couldn't get a, simple position. So I can't even imagine. So they didn't let her in. How did that happen?
Yeah, they did not let her in. That's one of the things. Actually, before I was Christian, even though I was really young, I was involved too. Entire family was involved in this. So, and a lot of people were promising there was a bright future for me if I kept in. And most likely, I could have been really, really high position somewhere in Turkey today. And some of my friends been there, and they are still holding these positions. So I gave up on those too when I converted. I knew that I was there's no way. So I gave up on all those dreams or possibilities. So they didn't let her, but they also informed her why. And your son apparently involved in these groups and churches and whatnot. So they rejected her. And one night I moved out, by the way, out of the house. It was after my graduation. I moved to a different city working for this organization and for publishing house. And my dad called me one night. And actually, I was in a meeting. There was a bunch of voicemails and messages on WhatsApp. My dad is swearing, cussing at me. How dare you do this? You ruined our life. You took everything away. How is your brother is going to find a job from now on? You took everything away from us. It's not about me. It's not about my religion. It's not what I believe. It's not about my relationship with them, but it's all about us. You did this to us. You ruined us. You harmed us. We are done. All that. But it's not only just talk like this, but just full of cussing. And he's still trying to call me. And I answered, and I should have not. He kept cussing, kept yelling, and I just hung up. And that was the last time I talked to them for a year and a half or two. They did not reach out to me. I blocked them, to be honest, because my dad was still calling me for no reason. He just wanted to yell. He just wanted to cuss more and get that anger out. And then he started threatening me in messages. It's like, I'm going to find you. We're going to kill you. We're going to find you. We know where you are, whatnot. And I'm frightened. I'm crying. I'm in tears. In different ways, once I lost my family, I literally have no one left at that point. And it's such a weird feeling. I was never close to my family. I was never felt love or anything. But you still knew that there were some people there that would maybe care for you or would probably care for you if you were in trouble or something. And I was like, oh, it's all me now. There's no one else. I'm by myself. that sadness is there. And then there's like, goodness, my dad is coming to Antalya. He's coming and he's going to find me. What if they literally find me and kill me? And that's not a far reality either. That's a possible.
No, yeah.
That's a possibility. No, yeah. And I'm in fear and sad and I don't know what to do and reaching out to some of the people in the church. And I'm hiding, I'm watching, like I'm going to work, I'm going out to the store, groceries and stuff. I'm like, what if my dad's just going to come up from corner and kill me? Anyway, it's frightening. Even now, when I think about it, like my heartbeat is like increasing. And yeah, that's the thing. I did not talk to my family for 2 years. I got married during this time. They were not involved in any part of the wedding or anything, nothing. My wife is from Kansas. I was all by myself. That's funny and sad. Really tragic. I was all by myself. I just bought my own suit, my shoes, and everything. And I moved to States. I came to States, not moved. I came to States and I got married. There was no one from my family's side. My groomsmen are all my brothers-in-law and one of my friend who I just met at this conference and invited me to their church. He moved back to the States and he came to my wedding and he was my best man. And he was the only person and one or two other people that I know. Other than that, it was all my wife's family and friends. And we moved back to Turkey, to Antalya. Things got a bit smoother, but it's still, I was not talking to anyone, from my family, just my brother. My brother is 4 years younger than me. He did not care about religion or life, anything. So he had relationship with me and kept informing me, to be honest. Like he was like, oh, my dad is doing this, doing that. Look, he was just giving me inside information to protect me, to be honest. Apparently, my dad even came and watched me because that's so creepy, yes. But my brother tells me that he has pictures of me, the church buildings that I walked in, which is an office in Antalya, and places that he knows my apartment. He knew my apartment. He didn't do anything. He did not even come and introduce me. This is after I got married. He was following me. Somehow, I think a year later, I called my mom because my brother told me my mom is really like living like dead. Like she is really sad. She is like lost a child and constantly sad, constantly crying. Every night she was apparently crying, even though I didn't have a close relationship with her, but I don't know that was the case. My brother told me, insisted for weeks, please call my mom. Please call my mom. It'll be all right. And I called my mom one time and my wife was in the other room. And I'm not kidding. We cried for 10 minutes. Nothing. We could not say anything. And I started having conversation with my mom. We started having more like messages back and forth. And my dad knew it, that we had these talks. And at some point, again, because of the honor-shame culture, every single people in our family, extended family and friends knew that I got married, but they did not have the wedding. I don't know what kind of lies they were telling them, but apparently they were not telling the entire story truthfully. And they wanted to have this Turkish wedding for us and reconcile. And I still did not talk to my family and my dad apparently consented to this. It's been a year and a half. Apparently he got over it, even though he's angry and mad. And I said, I didn't think about it. I was angry. I was like you don't deserve this. Like, I got married. This is all you did to me. You made me live in fear for all this time. These all the thoughts that I have in mind. And I'm like, you know, no, you don't, none of you deserve this. I mean, that's not a Christian way of thinking, but I was so hurting. That's the way I was thinking. But later on, I talked to my wife, talked to my pastor, and I was okay with this. And then we flew to Istanbul, had this Turkish wedding, and that's the first time that I saw my dad, and we did not even talk. He did not apologize. He did not do anything. I did not. And yeah, and all of a sudden everything was okay. And that's one of the thing about, again, Turkish culture, it's honor shame culture. Even though my dad is the one supposed to apologize, he would never.
Yeah, this, it's funny because it's like, you mentioned Armenian genocide earlier, and I feel like some people still think that Turkey is going to apologize one day, and I just laugh and laugh and laugh and can't stop myself because it's not a culture to apologize ever, like, especially, you know, important stuff like that, but like that, you know, a parent apologizing to his children for any reason is just like unthinkable. Like, it just doesn't happen. You know, again, who do you think you are? Like, you know, again, that master's like slave relationship moving, you know, trickling down in different ways. So is your relationship better now?
Better. I'm talking to them once a month. Perhaps we're doing FaceTime, whatnot, and we're talking, but that's it. I never had a good relationship with them anyway, as I said earlier. But after this, it is so damaged. Even though I moved on, I forgave them. Especially, I've been reminded that I have to forgive because I've been forgiven. It's never same. I mean, it's not even same as it was before, which is still not good relationship. But it's not even then. It's just more like acquaintances. Like, we know each other. Yeah, we know that we are somewhat family. We talk. But perhaps part of it's like they know how much they hurt me, and they know that how much I've been hurting, that I am aware of this. I wrote letters that I told them that I forgave them totally, and I even tried to explain why, the substance of that forgiveness. And I was hoping that that will open up some conversations, which it did. My dad started questioning, not necessarily questioning, but my dad started arguing with me, and he was trying to defend Islam to me, and or saying, like, look about this, what about this, what about this? So it definitely opened up some conversations, and we are having those conversations here and there. But yeah, it's never been the same. Yeah. And now I'm in the States. We're living in California, Escondido, California. I'm attending a seminary here, Westminster Seminary, California. It's a 4-year MDiv, Masters of Divinity in Divinity class degree. And I'm in my second year of 4. Yeah. They are there.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry about that. It's a happy story, but there's sadness in it, which is, you know, which is the gospel, I suppose. It's not all happy endings on this side of death, I suppose. Do you feel like the Lord provided you a new family? Like, do you feel supported here? How is your life in America has been?
Yeah, definitely. The church family is really great, and you know, you've been cared. It's definitely, there's this longing. a different kind in which nothing will fulfill this family relationship on this earth. I love my wife. She's great, and I'm happy to have her as my family, and I'm thankful to God for her, and that's tremendous help to me. And church is great, as I said. It's this Christian unity, Christian bond is different. You know, people will be there for you, that care for you, love you, and for the sake of Christ, because all we've been made family.
No, that's at least good to hear. So maybe did you want to share your thoughts on Protestant church and the Catholic church, or do you just not want to go there today maybe?
Yeah, we can. Definitely. I would say maybe more I can give information that might be helpful for the hearers rather than my own thoughts. The Catholic Church context in Turkey, and these are my observations as a Protestant, so take it for whatever it's worth. The Eastern Orthodox and Catholics in Turkey have this broader inclusion of Muslims as well. So they are not as evangelistic as Protestants or Reformed people, I would say. What I mean by that. So when I worked in the library of the Patriarchate of the Eastern Orthodox Church, and whenever there are Muslim people go there or talk to them, or they are even if they are questioning, they are not willing or interested sharing Christianity with the hope that they will find a truth that we have as well. And that was always troubling for me. And this is the same for Roman Catholic Church in Istanbul as well. So when people come, there's not even indication or hope or prayer that that these people will find truth in Christianity. So there's this idea, yeah, it's all religion, we're all going to the same, yeah, climbing the same hill, and the top is the same for all of us, God is same, but that's not true. Christianity is so distinct from rest of the religions, it's unique. Nobody's sharing the gospel in these churches I'm talking about, but again, this is my observation as a Protestant, as a Reformed Catholic Protestant. So, for example, there was years ago, he departed, but there was the press secretary of the Eastern Orthodox Patriarchate. His name was, Epidephoros? Anyway, and there was this webpage. People were answering questions in videos, like in 1 minute or 2 minute videos, or maybe even more, longer, 3 or 4 minutes, for any topic. You could find any issue, any topic, all the experts on this webpage. The owner of this webpage was interviewing everyone and multiple questions. And this Eastern Orthodox priest has been interviewed about Christianity under the topic of Christianity. And the person asked him, like, what's the crucifixion? Like, what's the reason? What's all about this? It's a great opportunity, like, to tell the distinct uniqueness about the cross, about the Christ and the love of God for the world. And it could be, it didn't even have to be deep down. He didn't have to go all the way to biblical theology or anything. He had an opportunity to share the gospel, yet he didn't. He just said, yeah, Christ suffered on the cross, and he just became an example for us how we can suffer in this life as well and endure the suffering. I was like, really? Really? Like, I mean, that's not true. I mean, it is in a sense, yeah, but that's not the main
part of it, yes, but... I agree. I couldn't agree more. Like, I just tell people, thank God Protestants picked up the slack that Catholics left behind with the missionary efforts. It's like they are scared, they're in survival mode, and you know, it's understandably, like, I see that, but I mean, you know, here we are willing to convert despite everything, and we can't even find Catholics who are willing to talk to us. Like, I was of age when I converted. I was 27, and living in Ankara, and it took forever for me to talk to a priest because they think you're a government spy trying to trap them into saying something they're not supposed to say. You know, it's just, there is that, again, that culture of fear, and it just smothers the gospel from Catholics, and it's the Protestants who are willing to do the work and share the gospel, and I'm grateful for it. No, you're right. That's how it is. Yeah.
Yeah. And this later on, more I've been reading theological books, and more I was grounded in Reformed faith, but still flirting with Roman Catholic Church, I would say, because there are a lot of things intriguing for me, especially historicity, the liturgy, and beauty of the liturgy, which I'm thankful for. The church that I'm going to has really nice liturgy, traditional, historical one, unlike many non-denominational that you will find. Anyway, I was in Izmir, Smyrna. It's a biblical land, and there's this church, Church St. John Evangelist. It's big cathedral. It's not even a church. It's a cathedral. And I looked up on their webpage, and they had evening mass and then rosary with it. And I visited to talk to the priest, and I met with him, and we had a good conversation. His name was Father Max. He introduced me as Father Maximilian, I think. And I, when I went there again later, could not find him there. Apparently, he's been appointed to Trabzon, which I thought it was interesting. I don't know if he is still in Turkey or in Trabzon. And again, this can be a talk for another day. And again, I'm not expert on these issues. But when we start talking about the salvation, topic of salvation, justification, sanctification, all of that, he was promoting the teachings of the Vatican II, and he was questioning my thought. Like, he even tried to emotionally approach me and said, like, your mom raised you and take care of you, like, you, like, help you to grow up and all that. Do you think she would go to hell? I mean, first of all, like, I've been, during that time, I was not talking to my family, and I was remembering all the trouble that they put me in and all the fear and everything. But aside from that, even if they are perfect to me, even if I had a very happy family, I answered them, yeah. And he was shocked. And I was, in my mind, I was thinking, like, there's only salvation through Christ. The faith in him, and regardless what you think afterwards, like, it's really open to discussion, like justification by faith alone, or faith with the charity that the grace, or participation with grace. That's really another day for another podcast. But regardless that, either way, the salvation is only through Christ, and church has been teaching that. There's no salvation outside of the church. That's what I believed as a Protestant, as a Reformed Protestant. I wholeheartedly believed, and I still believe that. And even if you think differently in terms of how someone is justified, I would say it all has to be through a church, through God, through Christ and the sacraments that he provided for us. And it was fascinating for me to hear him contradicting me, and I thought, I happen to believe, and I still do, historical belief of the church, both Reformed Protestants, I'm excluding evangelical non-denominationals, by the way, and so also Roman Catholics. It's a belief of our Christian tradition, that there is no salvation outside of the church, which means outside of Christ. And he even, there was a writing on the wall. It was from 1 John about loving God. And whoever loves God, loves his brother, knows God, all that verse. And he pointed that to me and he said, you see, like if they love, they will be saved. And he even gave me this example, which I think that will bother you too, knowing that the Islamic religious leaders in Turkey, there's this mufti. Mufti is, you can say, like a bishop of a region for Muslims. He is responsible of multiple mosques in that region. And apparently this mufti's son is killed by ISIS. That was a time where ISIS was on the climax of their power. They were really influencing Turkey. There were bomb explosions and things like that. And this mufti gave a speech in the meeting of this religious leaders, and the Christians were invited too. And he was telling me the story that this mufti, which is the religious leader, Islamic religious leader, said he forgave them. He forgave ISIS members. Okay, it's a beautiful thing, and it's a virtue. It's great, but when there's no substance of it, I don't know if that means anything. It's beautiful. It is great for our lives. And I'm glad and I'm happy for it. And I'm just like I'm happy that Muslims in Turkey do not read Quran or do not follow Islam. And they follow this Sufi religion, which is like preaching love. If you know the author, Elif Shafak, she wrote books and millions read in Turkey. Millions of people read in Turkey. It's all about love, loving God. And I even remember, I just looked at my Facebook post like years ago, before I was Christian, I was quoting her. And she says, like, how long you will keep fearing from God or being afraid of God instead of loving him? And I was like, yeah, that's Christianity. That's Christian message, but without a substance.
Right.
And again, they are just because they've been influenced by Christians all this time, by the monks in throughout the church history. They have the sparks of these, but just because they have sparks of these doesn't mean they have the substance. So that's a bit troubling for me. And I would appreciate if churches in Turkey, Roman Catholic as well, could preach this distinction that we are not same, we are different. And not necessarily it's another one, but it's a unique one. Not like any other religion. It's just not another one of the hundreds of religions in the world, but the only true one. And I would have, as a Turkish person, I'm hoping for many people in Turkey find the truth and joy and salvation that I found, the satisfaction and fulfillment in Christ. I hope many more people can find it. But when I hear these talks and when I hear this Eastern Orthodox or Roman Catholic churches just giving the message that, oh, you're fine where you are as a Muslim, that breaks my heart. And I'm not comfortable with that. So I'm sorry if I ranted for long, but that's
no,
my
not
thought.
Wrong. I mean, no convert is, because, you know, we know the difference. I think most people who are pushing that, they don't quite understand the differences between Islam and Christianity. If you haven't experienced Islam firsthand, you don't understand the difference. It's not just the words, you know, there's an entire culture that's hollow and shallow and like without love, like without that supernatural love that, you know, the Lord gives us through his son. No, I understand and I agree. And again, I said, you know, Catholics, we need to pick up where we left off. You know, we evangelize the whole world, you know, and I don't see why it can't be done again. But let's put a comma there, Oz. We should get together and talk about these again in the next podcast. So, is there anything else you'd like to add before we conclude?
Not really. I just would say I love your podcast. It's great. I love hearing different stories. I loved hearing Father Antoine Anthony, I believe. It was so interesting to hear his perspective. And I loved your book too. It's fascinating. And I'm hoping and praying that these things will be sources and encouragement for many people to either convert and find the truth in Christ, or will be encouragement for people to share this Christ that we have with others and people in Turkey. Yeah. And thank you for doing this.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate the encouragement. And it's wonderful to hear your story and the hardships you went through, and the Lord will and has, you know, rewarded you for your faithfulness. So hang in there. You'll be in my prayers, and we'll talk again, and we'll hash out all these missionary stuff a little more. I'd love to hear your experiences working for the publishing company and such too. So I'll thank you very much, and give my best to your wife, and I hope to talk to you soon again. Thank you very much, Oz.
Thank you so much, Daria.
Thank you very much for listening. And please feel free to share on social media and subscribe and leave reviews and do all those stuff that needs to be done to spread the podcast and all the good stories we hear. And again, thank you very much for listening. Let's live a little and bring the lost to life together. Mm-hmm.